Death is the only wise advisor that we have. Whenever you feel, as you always do, that everything is going wrong and you're about to be annihilated, turn to your death and ask if that is so. Your death will tell you that you're wrong, that nothing really matters outside its touch. Your death will tell you, I haven't touched you yet. And that's a quote by Carlos Castaneda from his book, Journey to Ixtlan. It's a really, really awesome book. And that man, he had so many amazing thoughts. And this is another one. In a world where death is the hunter, my friend, there is no time for regrets or doubts. There is only time for decisions. And I think, you know, a lot of times for those of us who are here on this earth, we often think as if we're here forever. We think that our lives aren't going to end. We know that we're going to die, of course, but, you know, it's those times when we face every small problem in our lives as if it's a tragedy, or we stress out needlessly over, you know, minuscule things, we seem to forget that we're just here for a little while. You know, in the grand scheme of things, we're just specks in this vast universe. And someday, we're all going to die. And in fact, you know, about 100 years from now, everybody listening to this podcast, everybody that we know, everybody that we have in our lives right now, this world as we know it, is going to be dead. Now, I'm not talking about the world ending or anything like that, but we're not going to be around unless there's some sort of miracle of science. And for a lot of people, that's a grim thought. It's really, really grim. And in my younger days, I used to torture myself over this. You know, I used to think about death a lot. I used to think about not wanting to die. But as I got older, I came to understand something, and that is that knowing you're going to die is a gift. And the reason why it's a gift is because it helps you to understand something. You don't have any reason not to take risks. You don't have any reason not to take chances. And you really don't have any right to lay down in misery and to keep yourself there, because you only have a little bit of time here on this earth. And if you're going to die anyway, you might as well be trying to make this life that you have, this precious gift that you've been given, into something that's worth living. My guest today is a gentleman I came in contact with a few years ago. His name's Michael. And he's had brain cancer twice now. And he's going into his second battle. He's had a few brain tumor before this that was non-malignant. Then he had a cancerous tumor. And now he's dealing with a glioblastoma. And he is approaching it in a way that I think can give us all a real appreciation for this life. And some things you're going to get from this episode, it's not a grim episode. It's not a tragic episode, I guess you might call it. It's not like that at all. Mike considers his cancer to be a gift from God, a gift that's allowed him to appreciate why he's here, and a gift that he believes has shown him his mission in life. And the reason why I really wanted to bring him on to the show is to give you all a sense of appreciation for what you have right now. What you have are options. You have decisions. And with every day, you can decide that you're not going to change anything. You can decide that you're going to be depressed. You can decide that you are going to be down. And that's not to say that I think that depression is something you can just get out of that quickly, but it is to say that, you know, you have the ability to make a decision about the things that happen to you in this life. You have the ability to make a decision about whether you're going to allow them to affect you negatively or whether you are going to allow them to help you to grow. And this brings, you know, my thoughts back to something that our current Secretary of Defense and a great man said, James Mattis. He said that, you know, when it comes to something like post-traumatic stress disorder, we shouldn't be characterizing it as a disorder, because a lot of times you can get something called post-traumatic growth, post-traumatic stress growth. And I think that this is a real example of how we can actually take horrible things that happen to us in our lives, take the tragedy, and we can turn it into something that's a gift to us, but more importantly, a gift to those around us, a gift to the world, a gift to others who are dealing with hardships. Because, as I've said before, and the reason why I do this podcast is because I truly, truly believe that the veteran community, those who are listening to this podcast, they're the sleeping giant in this country. We have in our community great leaders. We have in our community warriors. We have in our community talent. Talent that can make this country into a place that's going to have a gleaming future. A place that is going to experience growth. A place that's based on values. But I think that a lot of us in this community need to make that decision that regardless of what's happened in our past, what's happened to us that's kept us down, that we're going to make the decision to truly live. So just before we get into this interview, I just want to give you guys a couple of notes. Number one, if you like this podcast and you like the content we produce here at Warrior Soul, you should definitely consider joining the Warrior for Life program. Now, what this is a program that we put together to create a community around everything we do at Warrior Soul. And that is delivering tools, tactics, ideas, and covering concepts that'll help our listeners, to help the U.S. military veteran community, and anybody else who's willing to listen to live their best life. And so what you're going to find in there is some of the best information you can get about fitness, about nutrition, about optimizing yourself, about becoming mentally stronger, and about basically training yourself for all the difficult things that you're going to encounter while you're here on this earth. Beyond that, what you're going to be able to get is connection to a community of other like-minded individuals who are also trying to make the best out of their time here and going after goals and making their lives better, whether it be through career, whether it be through relationships, or whether it be through better life practices. Everybody who signs up is going to get a free 21-day testosterone optimization workout and a free testosterone optimization checklist. Now, I know that there's a lot of women who probably want to sign up as well. The issue is this, guys. Most of our listeners are men, and one of the biggest barriers to entry for men in living their best life is hormonal deficiency. And so if you get one of these, definitely hand it over to the man in your life. Or if you have friends who are men, definitely hand those over as well. But gentlemen out there, you're going to be able to get some of the best information you can get on optimizing your testosterone levels naturally without falling prey to some of these pills, powders, and potions that the supplement industry is trying to shove down your throats right now. So if you guys are interested in joining, both veterans and non-veterans are welcome. You can sign up over at www.warriorsoulagoge.com. That's AGOGE.com. And just click the main sign up link there. Like I said, it's completely free and you are going to get tons and tons of value out of this. The other thing I wanted to mention is that this podcast is sponsored by F-Bomb Nutrition. Absolutely awesome company run by two of my favorite people in the world, Ross and Kara. They have been so supportive of us and they're so supportive of the veteran community. Ross and Kara have been sending packages of their product overseas to the veterans, to active duty military members so that they can use them to supplement their MREs and to get some good nutrition and some good healthy fats in their diet. My favorite product of theirs are their macadamia nut butters, and they mix them up with chocolate, mix them up with sea salt, mix them up with coconut butter, and they're absolutely delicious. They taste like absolutely amazing. There's no sugar in them, and you can get 20% off of your first order if you head over to www.dropanfbomb.com and you use the code WarriorSoul at checkout. With that, guys, let's get into this interview with Mr. Mike McClintock on living your best life in the shadow of your own death. This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast. I mean, you had a lot of challenges ahead of you as far as things went. And can you tell us a little bit about those challenges? What's happened to you over the past couple of years? It's been about how long since you started dealing with what you're currently dealing with?
The spring of 2005, I started having what came to be known later as epileptic seizures. I had no idea what they were because I was not diagnosed epileptic ever. And so they progressively got worse over the summer, and I went to the doctor and was sent directly for a CAT scan, and found out the next day that I in fact had a brain tumor and would have to have that surgically removed. So that was the end of summer of 2005, August. And so I was told that I had plenty of time because it was a low-grade, slow-growing type of tumor that I could wait basically as long as I wanted to have it cut out. So I waited until the following June and had it cut out. And I was off work for 20 days, and I was back at full work, you know, unloaded, no restrictions, driving a semi after 20 days. So I went yearly for a follow-up MRI to make sure nothing was coming back. And in August of 2010, they found the tumor coming back. And because the first operation and follow-up went so swimmingly and smooth, I dove right in and said, well, let's get the team reassembled and knock it out. And they did. And the second recovery was twice as hard as the first. And I was having seizures like in the recovery room, you know, somebody would come in the room and turn a light on and I would have a seizure. I was real photosensitive for a long time. It took about 3 weeks in the hospital that time, 2.5 at least. And I was sent home and started recovering, and I had to go through chemo and radiation that time because the pathology came back as cancerous, whereas the first one was a real slow advancing benign tumor. So I've gone every year since and had a 6 month or 12 month scan every year. And I always go as close to the same date as possible to keep an even spread. on the images. So this year was the first scan in 8 years that they found something coming back. So they've all been the exact mirror image for 8 years where no change, unremarkable change. Well, this year was a very remarkable change. It went from being basically a black hole in the sky, if you can imagine looking at telescope pictures, to all of a sudden a huge constellation of stars that wasn't there. So I knew right away when the doctor called and said that they needed me to come in, that they weren't calling for high fives and balloons, that I passed the test. I've been down it, you know, enough to know that they only call you when it's not good news. So I got my wife and my mom and some other family members together, and we went out there and talked to the doctor, and he gave me the news, and I said, all right, well, let's set up surgery and cut it out. And I just sent my wife and kids away for 2 weeks, and I sat in my garage for 2 weeks, turned on some music, did a lot of meditating and soul searching, and focused every ounce of positivity that I could muster, and basically built a Jenga statue inside of my soul out of positive energy, and focused on that when I was young and how I used to have the passion and the fire that just burned inside of you. Anytime you wanted something, you just tapped into yourself and went and got it. I just focused on me. I decided it's time to be selfish, and I'm going to take everything I've got and build myself up and get ready for this and do everything that I didn't do last time to prepare for the fight, just like a boxing match or any MMA fighter would do. This is for the title. So I'm training like I'm fighting for my life, for everything, because I am.
So let me ask you this, Mike, because you've got, so this is the third time you're going through this. The first time was benign, right?
Yes.
Second time was cancerous. And then right now you're going through, it's called a glioblastoma. Right?
Yes.
Right. And this,
I think it's called glioblastoma multiforme recurrent, which just means it keeps coming back.
So the first time when this hit you, the very first time when you were told you had cancer, and brain cancer, what was going through your mind that very first time?
You know, I've never one time had the, oh no, why me? What did I do? It's never been like that, Chris. It's just, the first time that I got it and got told the news, I was in shock and disbelief. Like, what? Like, I've never even heard of this type of cancer. How do you get this type of cancer? I've heard of lung and liver and kidney and testicular and all that. I've never heard of brain cancer. How do I have brain cancer? You know, what did I do that caused me to get brain cancer? You know, it kind of confuses you. Like, if you had lung cancer, you would know, well, I guess I shouldn't have smoked all those years. Or liver, you could be like, well, I guess I should lay back on the drinking when the doc told me that. But no one ever gave me warnings about anything I was doing that might cause brain cancer. So I was just in a lot of shock and trying to process that, like, it doesn't even make sense, you know. That really turns your world upside down.
But you got through it. What was the biggest thing that helped you get through it the first time it happened?
Well, I'll tell you, honestly, being raised by Marines and having the short amount of experience on the island that I do, I am full of esprit de corps, and I know how to dig deep and pull out things out of myself when you think you got nothing left to give. And there's always something in the tank for you to grab a hold of and pull up. I believe that. I've always, my entire life, when an obstacle gets put in front of me, if I'm going for something that I want, I'm getting it. I just have to make it over, under, through, or around the obstacle. And that's going to happen because when my eyes are on the prize, I don't stop until I'm holding it and putting it up in the air and showing it off that I got it. I leave no doubters behind.
And so you go through that first time and you come back, you beat it that first time. And then second time, right? So you have a wife, you have kids. You got people who love you, people who depend on you. Yeah. I know going through that yourself is very difficult. For the people around you, that's got to be extremely difficult as well. How'd they take it? How did they get through it with you? And then how did they take it the second time?
Well, I think most importantly, I think, you know, they feed off of me and my energy, you know? So obviously I try to stay as positive and upbeat for them as possible, because if they see Dad falling apart and losing his stuff, that's not going to keep them tight and keep them boosted up, you know, the whole morale thing. They see the captain falling down and, hey, it's okay, let's all fall down. So that helps keep me motivated to keep up, to keep them going. But it's not easy, man. I'm here to tell you, you know, it's not easy.
Right.
But I just keep on doing it. Everybody that I see, they're like, man, you're amazing. You got some of the best or some of the worst news anybody could get, but you're just running around smiling and singing and talking. I'm having a blast. That's, you know, I don't know how much longer I got, but I know I'm going to get everything about every day that I've got left. I'm going to squeeze every drop of sunshine and love I can out of it. And I'm going to do whatever I want, you know, within reason, obviously. I can't go rob banks or nothing, but.
Yeah, I think one of the things you're getting at here is that, you know, this world is crazy, right? Yeah. It's a crazy freaking world that we live in.
Yeah.
And sure. You know, a lot of us, we go through our lives with a whole heck of a lot of fear, right? We go through our lives with a whole heck of a lot of fear that this can happen or that can happen. And a lot of us develop bitterness, right? Because of that fear. So,
or we get cynical and jaded.
Right, right. And whenever something happens to us, it's, you know, why did this happen to me? Or why do bad things always happen to me? Or I just can't win. You know, that those types of victim mentalities. But you know,
I've never had that mentality though. I mean, the way that I grew up in a really rough household. Oldest of five kids. Mom and dad that were like old school parents that if dad came home in a bad mood, he might toss mom around a little bit just because she looked at him the wrong way. You know what I'm saying? The way stuff used to be back in the day when, you know, in the 50s and the older generation. We didn't grow up in this soft, mamby-pamby, PC, you know, let's hover over our kids and make sure they have everything we didn't have as kids, you know. We fought for everything. So that's helped me become the man that I am. I still have to fight for everything I have. I've gotten a lot of stuff out of my life, but nothing was ever given to me. You know, I have a deep appreciation for working to get the stuff that you want. It means more.
Yeah.
And it also helps you develop a determination and a drive to accomplish goals and get stuff that you want out of life.
Yeah. And I really think it's that perspective of, you know, not automatically defaulting to, oh my God, this is the world's fault. The world is always coming after me. But really, you know, getting that idea of understanding that it's not what happens to you that happens. It's exactly how you respond to it. Right?
Exactly. That's like people, you always hear people talking about, I just want to be happy. Well, there's plenty of stuff to be happy about. Just be happy. You are in control of what makes you happy. It's, anybody can give you something that makes you happy temporarily for a moment or five. But what do you do when that feeling goes away? Are you just going to never be happy again? Or are you going to go find something that makes you happy and focus on that and get more of that and build up your fire and you're happy and find a passion that something that really drives you? Maybe you're out of it. You're not into the same stuff because we age and interest change and stuff like that. Find a new interest that drives you and relights that fire inside you. You know what works for me, oddly enough, right now, and it might sound silly? I prune trees and bushes in my yard. And really? I dig it. It helps me calm down and appreciate stuff more, focus on stuff. It's relaxing. It's creative. It's an artistic outlet. I mean, just find something you dig doing. You know, do it.
Yeah, that's definitely good advice.
You might learn new things about yourself that you want to share with other people, and they might like it. And you might have common interests with people that you lost touch with and start doing new things with each other again. Who knows?
Yeah, you know, and that's one thing I'm trying to get this message out there, that you know, if you're in a really dark place, there's a temptation there to isolate yourself, right?
Right.
There's a temptation to, you know, in the Marine Corps, we called it cocooning. If you're out in the cold.
Yeah, and, you want to go get in that dark spot and just hide out.
Well, not only that, you're in a mentally dark spot. Like when you saw Marines not talking, we're in the freezing cold. You saw Marines yep. not talking to anybody else. They're just sitting there. They call it cocooning up. And that's when you know that person's in a bit of trouble because they're not dealing with the cold right. And I think that's the temptation when you're falling into depression, when you're falling into a bad state, when you're falling into darkness, that the temptation there is to cocoon. And exactly. I think, you know, the thing is people need to move, number one, right? You need to get out of the house. You need to get some exercise and you need to get some oxygen. You need to take advantage of that natural pharmacy that we've got going on in our system. But two, you gotta do something to put your mind on something that's going to be creative rather than putting your mind on all the negativity.
You got to keep the temple clear.
Yep.
You only get one.
Yep. No, absolutely.
There is no replacing this one. If you break it down and destroy it, you're done.
So you just came through surgery, right?
And July 16th was the last surgery.
Yeah. Tell us about the experience you had while you were going through your surgery.
Well, it was, I believe it was about the longest surgery I ever had. The first time that I had the surgery, the tumor was about the size of an egg. It was just right above the right ear. So when they did the cut, it was really cool, like a question mark. It almost looked like the Riddler from the old Batman show. It had a really cool question mark scar right here. And when it came back, it was slightly smaller than the first one, but they went in the same way. And because bone being what it is, they can only take the stuff apart and put it back together so many times before it's like drywall. It's just not happening. We need a new piece of drywall. So they had to go in through the back this time. And so I had another cool scar, you know. And this time the tumor was encroaching on the optic nerve on the left side. So they weren't able to cut all of the tumor out because as they were cutting the tumor out, they were paralyzing my left side. And they knew that. So they had to stop and make the decision that after we sew him up and patch him up, he's just going to have to do chemo and radiation again to finish it up. We're done cutting. We can't. If we cut anymore, he's going to be permanently damaged and not recover. So I was like real happy he made that decision because so far it's working out. I had the first 24 hours in the ICU, the pain was way worse than the previous surgeries. I mean, it was so bad that I'm describing pain to the doctors that they're telling me you shouldn't even have known because the way the brain works, it doesn't have, it's not like when you cut your arm and you're like, oh shit, that hurt. The brain doesn't respond that way because it doesn't have those kind of nerve endings in it. It just has like transmitting and receiving, like a electrical type of contacts. So the pain I was describing, these doctors are like, you shouldn't even know that type of pain. And the description that I was giving them, they were just fascinated. Like, we need to be taking notes on this. So I'm laying in that bed and I was crying like a little boy. It hurt so bad that I was just literally sobbing. And they're hitting me with everything they can hit me with, fentanyl, Dilaudid, morphine, and whatever else they could cram in there. And they're like, nothing's working. And at one point, my wife or my mom asked them, you know, can't you just give him something? They're like, you know, look, if your husband was a Clydesdale horse, he would be on his ass laid out right now from what we've given him. We can't give him anything else. So they started talking about medical coma, and they're like, there's a really high probability that if we do that, he's not coming out, period. That'll just shut him down. So it was at that point and the amount of pain that I was feeling that I just said, I'm done. I've never been a religious guy at all. I've just always kind of been like, you know, one of those, I hope there's something, but won't know until we're done. I've had a very basic, limited faith, but it's just been basic and limited. So I'm in that bed, paralyzed on my left side. And the pain inside my head was so excruciating that I just gave myself up to God. I said, I'm done. I'm tapping out. I can't fight this fight anymore. And I put my arms out and I just said inside my head as loud as I could, I didn't want my mom to hear me say it because I already knew her heart was breaking watching her little boy being in this condition, you know? So I just, as loud as I could scream in my head without her seeing it, you know, or hearing it, I just put my arms out and said, take me home, God. I'm tapping out. I can't fight it anymore. And I just kind of let my arms go and dropped my arms. And then the most magical feeling I've ever felt in my life happened. I felt a set of wings, like the presence of wings opening up underneath the bed and coming out like this. And they came up and embraced me like that. It was all one fluid motion. It opened up, and as the feathers opened up, I felt this just huge release of hot, like gas energy, flowed up above me, and it kind of swirled around for a second, and then I felt like a bed sheet slowly being dragged off and snapped like that, like when you're making the rack in the morning. And when it snapped, that cloud, that presence was gone. Everything was gone. Everything went back to normal. The machines, you know, the pulse rate, blood pressure, everything started dropping back to normal. And within a couple hours, the pain was really manageable. It wasn't nearly as bad as it was. And they're putting me in a regular room. And the next day, they're shipping me to an inpatient rehab center because of the paralysis. And going to that place was crazy. I got dropped off there like a pizza. I couldn't move. So I had like four guys carrying me from the ambulance to a room and dropping me on a rack and walking away. And then, you know, they set goals for you when you show up to one of these centers based on your condition and what they expect out of you in a certain amount of time and everything. So because of my age and because of whatever they use to figure out their formulas, they set goals for me. And within a week, I was literally just smashing all the goals that they had. And that was blowing the doctor's minds because they hadn't seen somebody recover as quickly as I did. And they're all putting it up to the amount of positive energy I had when I came in there. They're like, they could tell when we brought you in that you had a smile on your face and most people are like crying and bummed out. And you come in with this big, huge smile, telling everybody, you know, I'm going to be fine. Everything's awesome. I'm good. I know in my head I'm going to be fine. And here I am 3 weeks later. I was in that place and they sent me home. I walked out of there as much as I could with a walker. But I mean, I walked out of the facility. I'm back home. I'm cruising around in a wheelchair. I'm doing some PT every day, getting the muscles back in shape. I'm putting on weight before I start chemo so that I know last time I went through chemo, I was 199 pounds and I was not as buff as you are, Chris. I mean, who is? But, you know, but no, seriously, I had a pretty good, you know, thing going on. My physique was all right. But when I got sick from the chemo, it really got bad. And I dropped down to probably about 135 pounds from 199. So now I got weight coming back. I got a good 2200 calorie diet going. I'm eating six squares a day, all evenly spaced and, you know, about the same protein and calorie intake. So I got a good level of stack going on and I'm PTing right. And everything's holding good and going together. I'm just trying to do everything I didn't do to prep last time. That way, when the chemo comes back and wants to take from me, I got some weight to donate. That way it'll make sure it'll help me recover. Yeah, I got a plan in place and I kind of think if I follow it, all these doctors are going along saying I got a good plan. So I got a good plan and a good attitude. So as long as I keep that stuff together, I should be good to go.
So in terms of everything, as far as, you know, your recovery, going through that surgery, going through that horrible pain that you were going through, yeah. What's driving you to fight right now? Like what is the thing that gets you up every day and says, all right, I got to do everything I can to get better.
I think honestly, and some people might go, this guy's crazy or whatever. I think honestly, first and foremost, it's God. Since God came down, that totally changed my outlook on everything. At first, I was kind of like, you know, I didn't really see nothing or hear nothing. I just felt it. And you can't help but ask yourself when you see people sitting around looking at you telling the story, do I sound crazy? Right? Because some people think anybody that believes in something might be a little crazy.
There's definitely people out there who are going to be like, oh, it wasn't God, or oh, it wasn't this, or oh, it wasn't that.
It was the drugs.
Yeah, it'll get we'll get those kind of comments anytime anybody mentions God on any and you
check
know,
this out. The thing that cemented it and made me really believe 100% in it, a real good friend of mine emailed or texted me a picture of a quote from the Bible, and it tells word for word the story that I just told you about that hospital bed.
Yeah.
And that, when I read that, it was like the words were jumping off the page into my eyes.
Yeah.
So that further convinced me, and that's one of the things that gets me up every day and gets me, maybe it doesn't get me up, so to speak, because my eyeballs are automatically click at 4, you know, but it does, knowing the man upstairs came down, that motivates me to get up and just tell people about it. Sure. It makes me want to share my experience because I know there's at least one, maybe two, maybe 200. There's 200 people out there looking for somebody like me to fire them up. And excuse my language, but you can't sit around and wait for somebody to come and square you away. You got to unfuck yourself sometimes, right?
Right.
Sometimes you're the only one that can smack yourself and get through to yourself when other people can't. So square yourself away and grab yourself and shake yourself and wake yourself up and get that passion inside you burning again. Don't shake shit up.
I think that, you know, one of the things, because I live out here in a blue zone near Loma Linda. They got blue zones around the world, right? It's people, they're areas of the world with the most centenarians, the people who live past 100. And, you know, they do statistics on what people do in those blue zones. Right. So I've lived in two of them now. I lived in Okinawa and now I'm living out here near Loma Linda, California. Right. And, you know, I think there's a few others out there. But the things that they're finding, it's not always diet, right? Because the diets are mixed. They're different, but they have lower rates of processing in their diets. They're eating whole foods. They're doing that kind of stuff. But the one thing that they all share in each of these areas is they have, a positive mental practice that they do, whether it's prayer, whether it's, you know, meditation, whether it's anything, they all have a spiritual side to them. And I think that's really, really important because I think that's something we've adapted and evolved as human beings to help us cope with a lot of the things. Cause like I said, if you look around this world, it's hard being a conscious being, right? It's hard being a conscious being with rational thought and everything like that. Because
start every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't think we'd be where we are today. I mean, you can say all you want about religion and everything like that. And yeah, religion might have caused a lot of horrible things, but I don't think we'd be where we are today as a world with so much comfort and so much anything without religion.
Exactly.
Or spirituality or God.
Religion is the basic establishment of the basic rules of life. When you think about it, you know, the Ten Commandments, you know, that was put out there for a reason. It wasn't just to control people. It's like, hey, dude, it's not cool to just go around killing people.
You know, right.
What is the greatest? There's all these different religions, right? But one thing that we all can agree on, no matter what the differences are, they have the same basic fundamental agreement. Their God, they might say their God's better, but at the same time, all of their gods just want us all to love each other. That's the most important thing. They don't want us to hate each other. They just want us all to love each other and do the golden rule, man. Treat you how you want to be treated.
Right.
You don't have to be an asshole all the time.
Right. And that's
being an asshole all the time is you can never take a break.
No, you can't, man. You can't.
And you don't have the practice to be miserable.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's that. I mean, that's important for people to remember, because one thing I can't. Yeah. One thing I can't stand is when, you know, if somebody's got a spiritual belief, if somebody's got a spiritual practice that they're doing, if they have faith, I can't stand when I'm sorry, there's an emergency alert going on over here. We just got a flood warning. No, it's a flood warning. Talk about warnings from God. But but I can't.
I'm your guy. He didn't call me yet, so I'll give you a heads up if I get a phone call from him, right?
Yeah, no, but I can't stand when you get people who don't believe in God looking down on people who do. And at the same time, if you don't believe in God, I mean, I'm not going to come after you and say and try to impose my beliefs on you or anything like that. But I think that if we're denying that faith has a really powerful role in our society and in making this country what it is, then you're blind.
I had some relatives visiting me in the hospital after that experience. I don't mean to step over you, but I just want to tell you this real quick. I had some family members that they cannot understand why I'm so happy and upbeat. And I keep telling them, you know, after the whole experience with, I feel God was in the room with me and setting me free from that pain and everything. I said, I feel like God blessed me. This is not a curse. I didn't do anything. I'm not a bad dude. I didn't do anything to have this given to me. God gave it to me as a gift to go out into the world and tell my story and motivate people for whatever reason, you know, whatever they need help with. I feel compelled to talk to people and help learn how to lift themselves up and be self-reliant. You don't have to rely on somebody to come and do something to make you feel better. You can find it. You just have to learn how to look for it. It's like anything, when you were giving me tips on how to meditate years ago, you just got to figure out the best way for you to get there. And once you get there, you're going to get really good at it. And you'll be able to do it without even thinking about it. And 10 years later, here I am. I could meditate right now. You know?
Yeah.
But it's like anything. If you dedicate yourself to finding you inside of you, the old you, the new you, who do you want to be you? It's all there. You just got to grab a hold of it and put the pieces together.
Yeah. I think
it's, you know, it's not a big, huge hidden secret. You just have to figure out what works for you.
Exactly. Exactly.
I can tell you how I got there, but it's up to you which trail you want to walk down.
Right.
You know?
Right. And a lot of it, I mean, a lot of it, you need experience. You need to get out there into the world and you need to see how other people live. Right.
Exactly.
You need to see how other people live. And I know, you know, one of the things that a lot of the people who listen to the show obviously are veterans. Obviously, a lot of them have been to places where people don't have it so well. And, you know, when I was in Iraq in 2003, you know, whenever it started getting to the point where it sucked, like, and I couldn't stand being, because my experience with war wasn't exciting. It was boring. Right.
Sure.
It was boring as hell. And it, a lot of hurry up and wait. We're sitting here. Oh God, you know, everything.
Stand by.
It's hot, you know? And, the thing, that always got me though was, you know, I'm here, I'm complaining cause it's hot. I'm, you know, thirsty. I got a headache, but I'm looking at this kid over there who, you know, is playing in a sewer or fishing in a polluted river, the Euphrates River. And he's got to live here. He's got to go through his adolescent years here. You know, he's got to deal with the lack of water, the lack of clean water and all that stuff. And, you know, I always tell people we lived, even if you consider yourself not well off, if you got a cell phone and you got running water and you got a refrigerator, you have it better than so much of the rest of the world. You have so many things. Yeah. Those little things, man. And I can't believe what people complain about.
And that's some of the stuff that has been awoken inside of me. And that's why I decided after that, I put a smile on my face and I grabbed a hold of that wheelchair and I started owning it, Chris. Every morning when I got my child at 7:30 delivered to my bedside, I grabbed my phone, I threw on some motivating music and just started listening to it every morning. Mm-hmm. And I didn't give a shit what the volume was like. I was going to, you know, act first and beg for forgiveness, you know, than for permission. Mm-hmm. So I started putting my music on. A real good friend of mine from work sent me a text one morning, and he used to work on the CH-47s in the Navy. Mm-hmm. Was that Sea Stallion, Sea Knight, or the Chinook?
Yeah. Yep.
So he's the guy that when I started my job a year or two ago, he started being my trainer. So he's like, knows exactly what's going on. He texts me all the time. He'll text me videos and songs and shit, motivating stuff. And one morning, the dude sends me a text and says, "Hey, bro, I've been thinking about you a lot. And I heard this song and made me think about you even more. It's that new Bulletproof song by Godsmack." Mm-hmm. I don't know if you heard it, but it's pretty cool. You might want to check it out. And so I listened to it, and I was like, immediately, like, it felt like I wrote the song. I heard the words for the first time, and it hit me like when you were a kid and you heard a song, got all fired up. Mm-hmm. You know, it was one of those, and I was hearing the words, and it was just coursing through my veins, bro. I was just like, wow, it felt great. I felt like I was 21, 10 feet tall and bulletproof all over again, just ready to attack the world, seeing everything through the eyes of a child. Remember how excited you used to get looking at simple stuff when you were little? I have that feeling again, and it's amazing. And one of the posts that, I don't know if you saw it or not, but one of the posts I've been trying to put like a daily motivational type of thing to get people fired up, you know? And one of the things I posted a couple weeks ago, and it's genuine, dude, I would never, ever in a million years wish this on anybody. You know how people deal with somebody, oh, I wish that guy was dead. You know, I hate him. Just in jest for whatever reason. I would never wish this medical thing on anybody. But what I would wish on everybody that I come in contact with is that you could feel a very small percentage, even if it was 0.99% of what I feel about life in general right now. I wish that I could just give that away to people and make them sick like I am. I've got this zest for life that I've never had. I'm always smiling. People say, "How you doing, Mike?" Awesome. And I mean it. I'm not just being sarcastic. I don't like to talk just because the sound of my voice is good. Actually, I don't like the sound of my voice at all when it comes down to it.
I hate mine too, man.
You know, but I really wish that, I mean, if it takes me talking and talking and talking to get people to open their eyes, I'll do it. But I think that's what God gave me this for, is to spread the word and get people to realize, you know, you hear people all the time, "Oh, I'm looking for proof. I'm proof. I couldn't walk a month ago. And I'm up walking around. I can show you right now. I can stand up if you want to see it." You know what I'm saying? I couldn't do this 3 weeks ago. I was paralyzed. My entire left side was paralyzed. I had to have people with a belt picking me up and supporting me. And I can straight up walk now. It's still a work in progress, but being dedicated to not just sitting around and doing PT to build all my strength back up, it's coming along. Coming along faster than they thought it would.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, again, it just goes back to understanding that as a human, we have a lot of complicated facets to our brains and a lot of complicated facets to our minds.
Untapped potential.
One of the things we need to be doing constantly is motivating ourselves to be in control of ourselves, motivating ourselves to understand.
And motivating others. Yeah. Everybody needs a pep talk now and then.
And to focus on the things we can control. Because so many people are out there, they're worrying about the things they can't control. They're worrying about politics. They're worrying about CNN. They're worried about Fox News. They're worried about whatever's popping up on the internet these days, or whatever's popping up on Facebook. But if you could start to take charge of the things in your life that you can control, you know, your mood, right? Your body, what you can do to take care of your body the best way possible, right? Yeah. The way you approach things, whether or not you're going to let some asshole who said something to you ruin your day, or whether or not you're going to just keep going on with your life and working on what's going to move you forward. Those are all choices you make. Right.
That is a prime example of one of the tools that I've been using as I test this out and just kind of gauge where people are at and how they're going to react to what I'm going to throw at them, right? I'll ask them just a general question about, what do you care about? And everybody kind of looks at me like, what do you mean? What do you care about? Like, give me an example of something you care about. Like, for instance, somebody walks into your office and they look at you a certain way. You don't know the guy. You've never seen him before, but he looks at you a certain way and you don't like it. And you automatically have this preconceived, I'm not going to like this dickhead. I can tell by the look on his face. He looks smarmy or he looks cocky. You know, you just automatically have that preconceived notion. I'm not going to like this guy. And you might be right, but you might not be right. So what if you see somebody on the street and they're doing something that has nothing to do with you? They're not looking at you, nothing. But they say something or they make a noise that you don't like. Why do you care? People will let stuff like that ruin their day, or at least a few moments of their day, you know, just caring about something that doesn't mean shit. But then they've got all this stuff in their life that they should care about, and they don't give a shit about it. You see where I'm going? It's like, right. Why do you care about this more than that when you should actually care more about this than that? Right. Our energy focus.
Right. You waste energy on stuff that's not important at all, or that shouldn't be important, or that shouldn't be taking up that much of your time.
Exactly.
You know, and I always wonder about these people who make comments, like negative comments. It's like they make a career out of making negative comments on YouTube videos and things like that. And it's like that person who made that video is going on with their life. They're probably not paying attention to your comment. They're probably not paying attention to you.
Right.
But you need to come on here and waste your energy on you know, spreading your own dumb idiocy. And,
yeah, exactly.
The world would be so much better if you just focused on your own stuff.
That actually gets people thinking when I ask them, what do you care about? And they're always like, what? What do you care about? And why do you care about it? And that really twists people up.
People should think about it. People should think about it. What do you really care about? What's really important to you? What's in your code, right? What's your code as an individual, right? What's your standard? What are you going to tolerate? What are you not going to tolerate? Right.
Exactly.
What are you going to spend your time on? What are you not going to spend your time on? And I think that's something you should think about every single morning. You
know, absolutely.
I write that stuff down in my journal every single day when I wake up before I'm starting. What am I going to do? What's important for me today?
Exactly.
What's not important for
me? If you don't have goals, what are you doing?
Right.
How do you know if you're getting where you want to go?
Exactly.
And if you're not getting where you're going, why are you alive? If you don't have goals and stuff you want to do, then why are you here?
Yep.
I mean, that makes people question it. I want people not to question it. I want people to find their goal and go after it and give themselves a reason so they don't doubt why they're here. I know why I'm here, and I'm taking advantage, and I'm training, and I'm trying to grab a hold of handles and pull myself there until I get there. I'll know when I'm there, when I get there.
Absolutely.
I know I'm not there yet.
Why are you here? Let me ask you that. What does that mean to you? What does life mean to you?
Life means everything to me. It means more now than it ever did. But I think the reason that I'm here is to help people ultimately and get them up and awake and walking around and appreciating life and everything that it has to offer. I mean, we're surrounded by miracles that we walk past blindly every day. You know, people are always talking about, I need proof of God. You're surrounded quite literally by proof of God. The fact that your organs are wrapped up in skin and your stuff's not just hanging out, falling on the ground is a miracle. The air that you're breathing right now is a miracle that you're not a fish, because you'd be drowning right now. You know what I mean? So we're surrounded by miracles, but people still have to question the most obvious things. People need to kind of climb into themselves and back out of themselves and rediscover the world around them. I don't think it's too late. You know, I think that if everybody pictured themselves as a rock being thrown in the water and that ripple effect, I'm trying to be a rock right now and cause a ripple effect. We could all be a rock and cause a ripple effect in the water. We could change the world. If we kept waking people up a little by little, we could change the world.
Explain that analogy a little bit, the ripple effect with the water.
You know, when you throw a rock in the water, you know, nice, calm, flat water, it's not doing nothing. It's just flat like glass. When you throw a rock in it, you see a splash, and that's the effect. And then there's the ripple or shock wave, it was an explosion and so on, you know. well, that ripple goes on and it touches things as it's spreading outward. So if you're positive energy and you make a big impact and send off a bunch of positive ripples, it's going to make contact with a whole bunch of stuff and maybe spread that positivity around and cause other people to want to be a rock and make an impact in their community. Or I'm just hoping to get people, you know, up and active and want to be involved and not be an isolated hermit and leave me alone. Go outside and be friendly. Get to know your neighbors. You know, I've got wonderful neighbors that I didn't used to know, but they have always been nice to me, so I've always been nice to them over time. And we talk at the fence all the time. It's almost like a Leave It to Beaver. You know, we wave at each other and give each other the Christmas gifts and things that, you know, baked goods at Christmas time. A lot of people don't even talk to their next door neighbor at all. That's not cool. I mean, you're supposed to love your neighbor, you know? Yeah, I mean, I understand people have conflicts with their neighbors. Obviously, stuff happens, you know, but at the same time, there's no reason that, you know, I used to walk past people and they would try to be polite and say hello, and I just had an attitude and ignored them, wouldn't respond, wouldn't even acknowledge them with a look or nothing. And then this is one of the things that I realized about myself, that that's rude as shit. That really is rude. If someone's taking a second out of their time to say hi to you, the least you can do is return the favor and say, hey, how's it going? Mm-hmm. How are you today? It doesn't cost you anything.
Absolutely.
But too many of us just say, piss on it. I don't know them. What do they want? Or whatever maybe you're just miserable and just don't want to participate. I don't know, but I'm hoping that maybe I can reach a couple of people and let them know. I used to be that way. And if you change yourself a little bit, you can be a little bit like I am right now and really tell people when they say, how you doing? You can look at them and go, I'm awesome. How are you? And I mean it. You know what I mean? I really mean it. That's my new credo. I'm awesome. You can be awesome too. It's on you though. I can't make you awesome. You got to believe in yourself and just light your life up and be awesome. Fight like Mike, you know?
I love it. I love it. So we're coming, we got to wrap it up in a second, but I want to ask, so what's ahead for you? What's coming up for you?
What's ahead for me?
Yep.
You know, to be honest with you, I hope big things are coming. I don't know what, but, you know, I'm always out for changes. I love change. So whatever it is, I'm going to embrace it with both arms wide open. If it means turning into being one of them guys that stands up on stages, giving speeches, audiences, trying to get them fired up, I'll give it a whack. I'm good at talking. You know, I've been told anyway, but, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, I've got plans here and there about stuff I would like to do. I'd like to tie this journal up that I kept from the last fight and what I've got going on now. Maybe I'll turn it into a book. Who knows? I guess we'll just have to keep our eyes and ears open and, you know, see what happens with that. But right now, my ultimate goal is just to get through the chemo treatment and the radiation, which starts next week. And that's a 7-week treatment that'll go through the 20th or 21st of October. And, you know, I'll keep you posted on that, how that's going.
Definitely. But keep us updated on that.
Yeah, as you and I talk and email and stuff, I'll keep you up to date. But it starts next week and goes through October, so 7 weeks. You know, I've already done it once, so it's just one of the things I gotta gear up and get the mind right to head back out on rotation and take care of business.
You know? Well, Mike, number one, I want to thank you for coming on here. And
thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
I want to thank you for your story because I think a lot of people out there don't appreciate what they get here in life. And
I didn't used to.
Yeah,
I took absolutely. It off of granted. I took it off of
it. And I think it's the good things and the bad things that we really got to be appreciative of. And I'm not saying, you know, when you get kicked in the ass, say thank you for the kick in the ass, but be grateful for the opportunity to learn a new lesson. And
I was just going to say, everything that comes your way has a potential lesson to teach you if you study it and absorb it. You learn it. So next time you're not as surprised by it.
Yep.
You know how to deal with it.
Yep. And that's what something I want to acknowledge you for. You know, you're taking this on. It is what it is, but you're taking this on as a lesson for you, as something that you can learn from, that you can grow through, and that you can spot and inspire others with. I think that's amazing.
I've got big, there's a group called Immerman's Angels that a gentleman by the name of John Immerman had a very similar story to mine. And so the doctor that I first went to see to get my stitches out heard my story and asked if I'd heard of this group. It's a cancer mentorship. So they take people like me and they use kind of like the same technology that Match.com and the dating sites use to put people together that are real compatible. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I think you'd be really good for this group to, inspire other fighters and survivors. So I joined that group. I didn't do any of that stuff last time. I didn't utilize any of the support that I had being given to me for free, like counseling and stuff. I relied strictly on family and friends, which I'm lucky enough that I have a really, really strong support network through family and friends that I didn't feel the need to use the professional side because the personal side just made up for it. But now that I know that the doctors are like, hey, we recommend you try this because, you know, it's free. It's not going to hurt me to talk to people about it and share my experience. So sure, of course I'm going to try it out. I know as well as anybody, that's another great way to make contacts with people that you otherwise wouldn't normally. And that might broaden their horizons or my horizons or make both of our lives better. Who knows? You know, every difficult situation has sunlight, and you know, every dark tunnel or cave has light inside of it. Sometimes you just got to dig through it to find it. And once you find it, you just keep going until you get all the light and boom. It's all about, you just got to have strong belief and drive to succeed and drive till the mission's complete. You know, mine's not done yet. I know that. So that's what keeps me going.
Absolutely. And, you know, to everybody out there, you know, no matter what you're going through, whether it's, you know, something big or something little, whether it's relationship issues, whether it's disease, whether it's injury, whether it's financial trouble, just understand this. No matter what it is, it's absolutely not about that thing happening to you, but it's the opportunity you have to overcome that thing, the opportunity you have to grow, the opportunity you have to put it behind you, to get up off the ground and to make your life better.
Exactly. That's the message right there, Chris. That's the message right there. You just tied it up with a nice little bow. That's exactly the message right there, brother.
Wow, thanks, man.
If I could get that through to a handful of people and have them tell two friends and have them to tell two friends and so on, it could be a wildfire and spread. We could get a whole bunch of people contagious, uplifted, eyes open, walking around awake, appreciating life again. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Would be an absolutely new world.
It's a daunting task for sure, looking at it, but I think it can be done. I think there's enough people in the world that still have enough good in them and wise enough in them to do it. It's just going to take work. We got to put work in.
Yep. You can't be scared of the work. So
exactly.
Mike, I want to thank you for coming on today, man. Absolutely inspiring. And for everybody out there, no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing, appreciate this life. Get out there and live your best life, absolute best life, while you can.